before we get rolling. Brad, your name is on the screen. Can you hear us?
I can hear you very well.
Wonderful. Welcome, everyone, on August 18th to our monthly board meeting for the Grand Junction Regional Airport. We'll start with our call. And four of us is quorum. I think Cody Davis will be joining us, but I know you have commission meetings today. Cody Kennedy is here, Lee Kleinman, Quint Shear, and myself, the chair. And when Cody Davis comes in, we'll stop and mark that for the public record. Victoria, do you mind doing a staff roll call?
Sure. We have CEO Angela Padalecki, Director of Facilities Bentec, Director of Operations Dylan Heatherline, Director of Admin and Finance Sarah Mangy, myself, Victoria Hightower, Finance Specialist Jennifer Croker, Finance Specialist Travis Fortner, and Terminal Ops Manager Cameron Reese.
Perfect. And we have some guests with us today. Thank you all for joining us for our board meeting. And we're going to go into our Pledge of Allegiance and do it all together with you. This is so tricky. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Next, I will need an approval of our agenda. Steph, do we have any changes to the agenda as presented today?
No.
Okay, wonderful. May I get a motion to approve the agenda?
Move we approve the agenda as written.
Thank you, Commissioner Shear. Second.
Second.
Thank you, Commissioner Kennedy. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries. Do we have any commissioner comments today? And if you joined our Colorado Day where our dinosaur is coming home, pretty exciting news.
Pretty exciting.
Do you want to, are you going to talk about that in your?
I will.
Perfect. Perfect. We're excited for that. So thank you for your work on that. And any citizen comments today? Do we have any registered comments today?
We do not.
Okay. Thank you, Victoria. So we have a packed agenda today, and before we roll into it, it looks like the only item on consent is our meeting minutes. May I get a motion to approve consent?
Hey, Lindsay, I think we need to approve the agenda first, unless I...
Yeah. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I was trying to get my flag going.
No worries. Commissioner Shear, make that motion.
Perfect.
Thank you. So, Cody Davis, thanks for joining us today. I need a motion to approve the consent agenda.
Move to approve the consent agenda.
Thank you, Commissioner Kennedy. Second.
Second.
Thank you, Commissioner Shear. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion carries. So our past action agenda today, it's pretty exciting. And I think we have, am I correct in thinking that Colin Bible is going to be presenting a lot of these?
Yeah. I will take the first one, actually.
Wonderful.
But Colin's going to take most of the runway ones.
Wonderful. Thank you, Clara. So on AIP 91, the terminal amenities and vertical transportation.
Yeah. Okay, Dan is having trouble connecting. We have another Dan on the call, but it is not our Dan. So, Jennifer, could you possibly send him the link to the Zoom link? He said the one on the agenda is not working, but I connected through that one. So, if you don't mind checking for me.
Is it Dan Meyer on that?
Oh, I wonder if
it might be.
Yes, I'm on.
Oh, hi, Dan. Right on. Okay, Dan Meyer on our
Zoom
commission. Joining us virtually as well.
Trying to pay attention here.
Thanks, Dan, for joining us.
All right, so your first, the first action item that we have is AIP, which is Airport Improvement Program. I don't know that I spelled that off, actually, for you guys. But the FAA AIP grant related to our, what we've been referring to, the terminal amenities project. Just a quick reminder, what this really includes is a pet relief area, nursing mother's room, which has also been referred to as wellness, a family restroom that has an adult changing table, and all of those items will be in the secure area for passengers. And then it also includes the installation of an automated exit lane technology, as well as adjacent storage and office space and a staff access. The exit lane and the secure area, or the exit lane and the area for storage is not eligible. So in the project cost where I called out, it's about $499,000, about $500,000. Those items, according to the AIP handbook, do not qualify. So we've worked with the FAA to review that and kind of coordinate which pieces are eligible, and then that eligibility will be funded at 95%. As a quick reminder, these funds are actually coming from our the Infrastructure and Jobs Act, the IIJA funds, which they formerly referred to as Bill. We had 5 years of entitlements of those funds. The FAA has been really good with us. We've been sending all of our regular AIT entitlements towards the runway. We've really been trying to use these towards other projects that we haven't had the ability to fund with our runway program going on. So this image right here is an initial drawing and mock-up, but as going slow here, the exit corridor today, kind of where my arrow is here, that is that door that you're exiting currently. And then as you see this vertical, these vertical lines with all the doors, this will be that new exit technology. The wellness room and pet relief are a little bit out of the way for passengers to come. They're almost coming towards the exit. However, with that future planned expansion, all of that area up there that says pet relief and wellness and those items, that will actually be that expanded hold room. So those will still be accessible from there and it will no longer be next to the exit. So while it's a little bit of an odd location today, we think it makes sense with the long-term plan of the terminal. And the pet relief is a required amenity, even for an airport of our size. Nursing mother's rooms are required at certain sizes of airports. I don't believe that ours is actually a non-hub yet. But we think it's an important amenity, especially with the diversion traffic that we get.
So you hit the threshold for pet before mothers?
Yeah.
Thank you for saying that.
It is for service animals.
It's for service animals, what it's intended for. It's kind of part of ADA.
So really, all of these are intended to increase accessibility for our passengers. So.
And those are destinations, right? The people who are using them are used to kind of looking at the signage, you know, maybe even talking to someone to find where they are. So I have no concerns with the location even before expansion, but they're in an ideal location once the expansion opens.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the other piece of this, when it comes to schedule, those amenities that I just mentioned, really within the secure area, we're really shooting to have those completed before the holidays. We want those in place for, you know, our passenger traffic. We are working with FCI as far as lead time. We may have to adjust a little bit, but that's something we're working around. The elevator modernization, we're really looking at finalizing that in first quarter. So we'll be working on both the service elevator and the passenger elevator. And it's really, it says modernization, but I think Lance kind of described it to me as we're replacing everything except for the internal structure. So the control room and everything is getting upgraded as well. So hopefully we'll have less downtime from maintenance issues on that.
How old is those, are those elevators now?
I'll check that one out. So the service elevator hasn't been modernized or touched since 1982. A passenger elevator, there was a modernization that took place in 2002. To make it on both sides. And so they say about every 20 years you should modernize and get the equipment and whatnot up to technology.
And just as a reminder, that family restroom, you know, that is a restroom that is more than just a family restroom. It'll have a, you know, it'll have a, an adult size changing table. You know, we've been working with ARC on, you know, some of the enhancements there, and they actually want to feature it, but we're really excited. This is, this project is a huge improvement for our passengers who just have additional needs beyond average passengers.
Absolutely, and I think it sets us up for future success also with that dream. So, any questions, Commissioner?
And I think from a funding perspective, and also I know a few of these projects as we talked through them today, if you guys are thinking you've heard of this before, it's probably because we've already approved a grant application for the project. And many of these we actually have already approved or authorized Angela to finalize contracts for the construction, the design, and those other elements as well. So I did want to just add this column. The Gensler Design and Construction Administration fees were previously approved, I believe in February. I thought I put those dates on here. The construction cost for FCI, we had some preliminary estimates, but they were finalizing a few items. So the initial kind of approved project cost was closer to 3.9. The final that we're looking at right now is just over 3 million. We ended up pulling out a couple of things with regards to the secondary escalator. We talked a lot about that. We do think that's still a great future addition, but we also worried with Afton coming in April and the timing of that project that the first thing people would see when they came in is this giant construction wall. So by doing the elevators, we're hoping with that and monitoring the escalator that it's a little bit less disruptive during that closure. So that is why the price ended up coming in below. And then I called out kind of that ineligible. So this grant, which is the specific item to approve here, is about the 2.4 number, 2375.
Any other questions? Can I make a motion to accept SIA grant CIP 91?
I so move.
Thank you, Commissioner Penman.
Second.
Thank you, Commissioner Davis. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Congratulations.
Yeah.
So the next on our agenda, we have FAA grant CIP 92, and this is for the NAVAIDS design and build out on the runway extension. I'm assuming that Colin will take this back.
We're going to have Colin present on this. Yeah. So NAVAIDS are not something that, well, my guess is NAVAIDS aren't something you guys think about every day. I don't think about them every day either. And so I've actually asked Colin to just go over at a high level kind of NAVAIDS and, you know, what they are at the airport, kind of what the project. Okay.
Thank you, Angela. And I think that's really important. When Commissioner West and I were sitting in executive committee, he had asked a question, and I realized I don't think we've moved NAVAIDS or touched them since all of you have joined the board. When you were on the board, Commissioner Penman?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because didn't we get some new equipment that went out for the new runway?
We moved them.
We did.
Yeah. I remember that.
In 23.
Yeah.
In 23.
Colin, take it away. I think that background would be really helpful.
Yeah, I'm happy to. So the NAVAIDS, we use that term a lot, and as Angela said, really it's just short for navigational aids, and that is the visual and instrument systems that help basically planes land, especially in inclement weather. So this RA, there's a lot of things that fall under the hat of NAVAIDS, but the three things I want to show you today that I think are most important and really the major components of this reimbursable agreement are three items. The first is an approach lighting system, and we'll look at what each one of these are in a second, but approach lighting system, a localizer antenna, and then a glide slope antenna. You'll advance. So, an approach lighting system is what you see to the right, and it's exactly what it sounds like. It is a row of lights, and there's different formats of this for different conditions, but it's really just to help pilots visually identify that the runway is coming up, and it's really distinctive from the other lights. It's really obvious, actually, if you've flown in an airplane at night, you've probably seen them. If you ever circle the runway, they flash. They're very noticeable, and that's on purpose, is to make them stand out. The next item is a localizer antenna. That is on the bottom left. That is actually located on the opposite end of the runway from where you're landing, and it shoots some beams of signal basically down the full length of the runway, and it basically tells you if you're on track in a right or left direction. So it provides lateral guidance for instrument landing. So even in little visibility, the instrumentation in the aircraft senses that and knows if it's lined up right or left. And then finally, there's a glide slope antenna. And this graphic's the best one I could find that visualizes it. It's not actually fantastic, but basically it does the vertical guidance. So as an airplane comes in, it has a target that they're landing. They basically follow a flight path called a glide slope. And this basically provides a signal that mirrors that. It bounces a signal from that antenna off the ground, and it goes up at that same basically location. And so it tells the pilots with instrumentation if they're on track vertically as they descend. So we mentioned the work that's been done in the past. Currently, this is what exists on your runway, these three items. There's a temporary, I've got Malthus, that's a type of lighting system on the 11th of your existing runway. There's a temporary glide slope, and we kept the existing localizer in place. So we did these improvements in 2023, if I remember correctly, and we did it in advance of basically building all of that sub-base work and finishing some of the earthwork in some critical locations. But we shortened your runway slightly and moved this equipment to let the work happen in place. And this is what exists today. But this agreement that we are signing a grant for today is going to let the FAA finish their portion of design as well as procure some buildings. Basically, each one of these facilities has a small shelter that holds their equipment in it. And anyway, this is the future of what it will look like. issue. We did look and talk to them about potentially relocating existing equipment through the years, and the decision was made along the way that it was going to be too impactful operationally. And so new equipment is coming. So there will be, I think the last thing to say is there will be a future reimbursable agreement, and that'll happen next year. And that will be for ordering of this equipment. So the FAA will actually go procure all of this equipment and order that and bring it. And so they're going to do that next year. But this, yeah, this grant is for the remaining design of the shelter building, basically. So I'll hit pause. That's kind of a lot of information. Any questions on any of the major items we're talking about?
Any questions? It's so great. It's so interesting. And the last time they moved in that, they were able to keep their runway open, which I thought was really, really neat because FAA does this work. And it's reimbursable because they can't pay themselves. So we're renting the money, is that correct? And then being reimbursed.
Yep, that's correct. Good description.
I'm trying to get testing my knowledge.
We didn't
talk. I think this is our fifth reimbursable agreement that I can remember, at least on this project. They do individual ones. They're typically for procedure development. They'll do for design like this, and because we did that temporary one, there's been multiple. And so this one is a little unique from the other ones. They basically gave us an RA in 2025 that was part of Grant 87. We found out recently that there was some bookkeeping issue on their side of the house. They asked if they could basically rescind that grant that they'd awarded because they did something, just a bookkeeping thing, like I said, and they packaged all of that into this grant, so 92. So by executing this, we have all the anticipated money to pay back what we're expecting to date. Now, again, there will be another one next year. It just makes this whole day.
Question?
Colin? Yeah, question.
Go ahead,
Colin. Does this include the visual slope indicators as well? The BASI?
It'll be a TAPI, and it does. Yep, it does. Yep. They kind of got away from BASI. That was an older one, and FAA owned, and we're moving towards a FAA owned TAPI. In this project. Yeah, I started with, I struggled with this a lot. So a lot of things in navigational aids, frankly, like really, I mean, there's a lot of things that fall under that category, and I tried to focus on the main ones, but yes, that is one that would fall under it. There's actually three or four other major pieces of equipment that are a little less important to talk about, and frankly, could be kind of confusing for non-pilots. Try to focus on the main balance. But yes, let me answer.
How did you answer your question? Yeah. You're asking pilot questions.
Well, I mean, it's for general aviation, they use those PAPIs. So I just was curious.
Yeah,
how
probably way too high than the
PAPI.
We have two pilots on our board.
A whole lot. Those are very important. I mean, it's a good question. I struggled with where to draw the line. I mean, also as part of this, I don't want to go into too much detail because it's going to get really technical, but you have really great approaches today. When this is done, you're going to have even better approaches. We worked with them behind the scenes. Jeremy's team and myself worked with them and the airport too, got letters of support to actually get some RVR equipment, and the approaches are actually going to be, the instrument approaches are going to be even better than what you have today when we're done. So, I don't know. There's a lot of awesome things happening with this. It's hard to give a topical version of it without getting too far in the weeds. So, kind of where I drew the line. But
I'm glad that Commissioner Feynman has a question.
Thank you, Chair. Colin, just in this context, I want to understand the word reimbursable agreements. Who's reimbursing who?
Yeah, that's a great question, and Commissioner Marshall hit on it a second ago. So there's really two divisions that the FAA that we talk about pretty often. One is the side that we give grants from, which is the ADO, and then there's another side called the ACO that does all of this type of navigational aids, all of the flight procedures, those sorts of things. They basically, those two agents, the two sides of the house, can't give money directly to each other. And so the way the process works is that the ATO side of the house, who develops all these procedures and all this equipment, asks for money from an airport, an actual airport, and says, hey, here's our agreement. We're making an agreement with you that you're going to pay us this money. And then separately, there's a separate agreement that happens between AEO and the airport through a grant where they funnel that money to the airport, that the airport can then pay that ATO division. So a long time ago when I first started my career, this didn't exist. They just paid each other. But somewhere along the way, they decided that gave them a headache on their side.
So the word reimbursable, we're reimbursing them with money we got from the other group.
The pastor, essentially.
Correct.
Yeah, so it's, okay, so because I was leading up to a question which obviously mute, which is, do we have the funds to do a reimburse?
Okay, yeah.
But okay. Yeah.
And actually, the way these work, which is just another layer of complication, frustrating, is we have to pay them all of it up front.
Right.
So we've actually already paid the $899,000 to them, and then what they do is they'll send us a quarterly statement that says, this is how much we started with, this is how much we've spent so far, this is what we have remaining. We can draw down faster than those statements come in, but sometimes too, at the end, if they don't use all the money, then we get money back, and so it can just be kind of...
So we are being reimbursed for funds that we've already spent.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Okay, that's what I wanted to say.
There's a lot of reimbursing going on.
Yeah,
it is very confusing.
So we pre-fund, and then we file for reimbursement based on money, and then we true up at the end. And the best way to think of it is that, you know, the federal government requires that the contractor, when working on navigation aids, is the FAA Tech Ops Division, which is part of the ATO that Colin was describing. So, you know, it's the best way to think of it is the FAA is the contractor instead of United, Kelly, one of those companies. It operates differently, you know, from a cash flow perspective, and like the process is differently, but at the end of the day, that's really the situation we're in.
And was this $854,000 that we have already expended, was that a board action item?
Yes. So in January of 2025, actually.
Oh, it even says that there. Okay.
Yeah, it's almost 200. No, you're fine. I thought I put the dates on all of those.
No, that's fine. I just was trying to understand the cash, where it went, where it came from, where it went.
Right.
Thank you.
Yeah. And this one is relatively small. The next one that Colin is talking about, some of the preliminary estimates are looking like $5 million.
Mm-hmm.
So the funding on that one, we've really talked with them about and how the drawdown process works and how we want to achieve that. Because technically, we've spent the money and it is reimbursable. So the cash has gone out so we can get reimbursed. But there are other milestones with the FAA of being able to draw down periodically over time to keep it what they call active.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have to do a little bit more creative planning on that one with those larger dollar amounts, but this one being relatively small, we've already spent a few, so.
The cash flow implications are different, and so, you know, we're preparing to just handle that one differently because we don't want to close $5 million.
Right. Thank you.
Yeah. Really helpful. Any other questions? I don't think there's any other questions. Colin, is there anything else with this presentation? Are we ready to? Thank you. May I get a motion to approve FAA grant agreement AIP 92?
Motion to approve.
Thank you, Commissioner Kleinman.
Second.
Commissioner Scherr, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. So next on our agenda is FAA grant agreement AIP 93. This is our runway shift.
Yeah, and I'll handle this one as well. So we are currently in the middle of building basically the base, the pavement, the lighting, and these nav aids as part of the pavement package between 26 and 28. There's a table on the top that puts that total at $79,830,000. Last year, we were awarded a $40 million, basically $38 million grant, so $40 million of that with the match included. This action item is to accept a grant for the next tranche of money. So that $13.2 million is the next planned tranche of money that's going to fund that portion of work. This is in alignment with everything that we've discussed with our partners at FAA and CDOT. This is according to the plan. Now, there's an action item later where we're going to ask for a separate approval to accept any additional money that could shake loose and come our way, but this is the amount that we've discussed in this plan. So I'll go saying the same thing over here unless you guys have any questions.
There's more to this one. I think this was just like a global view of where we're at and moving towards that funding plan. And I don't know, Colin, if you want me to take this slide, but part of the reason we wanted to talk about this collectively too is 93 and 89. I think on that previous slide, when you look at it, what happened with this one is last year when the FAA, they basically had another project that the airport was not ready to fund, ready to move forward, sign the agreements, and, you know, do all the things on their side. So we were able to collect $38 million in additional grant funds, even though we didn't have an underlying contract. The typical order is we have to have the contract in place, know the exact cost. There's a very defined scope, so the grant just fits perfectly around it. In this case, they gave us that money because we had planned estimates. Meet and Hunt and Garber did an excellent job of working with them, so they were comfortable issuing that in advance of the cost. So when we got those bids back and then we approved that contract with United, that's where we had to then kind of fit the project costs with the grant costs. So the companion grant language and that amendment to 89 is basically, if you will, making 89 and 93, the companion grant is what they call it, but it's a way for the FAA to issue funds and grants in multiple years to pay for a multi-phase project. So it's going to be much simpler for Jennifer and I and then on their side. So the language in the grant is kind of weird because 93 is like 25% of cost, but the reason for that is when we look at those specific schedules from United, those total $55 million in costs. So the FAA between 89 and 93 is issuing $51 million in grant funds. So we don't have to split the invoices or redefine that construction project that was already bid out and give them sort of a false stopping point. We're able to submit invoices under either of these. The amendment to 89 is really changing and defining that scope to attach to the project. And you do see, and I think we've talked about this in April when we first talked to them, for all of those schedules, we are short on, there's about $1.3 million of project costs that we don't have grant funding yet for. That's within what our entitlement amount is, so we can do the work and get reimbursed later. There's a chance that they will amend it at the end of the year and increase, or we still have this possibility of some additional end of year money, like we got the $38 million last time, because we already have a contract, we have costs. So if there's another airport that's not able to proceed, we're asking for authorization on another item that to collect that funding. So Colin, I might have butchered that, but if you wanna.
No, I think you said it really well, actually. I think just to highlight what Derek said, some key things in my mind is we get a grant a lot of times, especially one with a project this large, and it's really common that, you know, something underruns, like there's less of, you know, some itemized quantity than we anticipated, or, you know, maybe the construction inspection costs come in lower than expected. And we have a really good FAA ADO project manager that tries to help and understands the magnitude of this project. And a lot of times he'll take any leftovers and basically try to recapture it and put it into a future grant, but that's clunky. And so really, I'd say the major benefit of this is it kind of cuts the meat out of that in a lot of ways. Like it lets items kind of move back and forth as needed between the grants to really maximize the value and make sure that we're actually spending it down. And on a project this large, I think it makes a lot of sense. And it's a new feature that the FAA has rolled out, and I think it's going to really help instead of us having to go back and amend up or down every single grant every time. I think it's going to be a really big help in the future.
That was my question. This seems really new and really innovative for the FAA.
So rather than having such a narrow scope that it's just this grant, that's where you're going to call it, so you can kind of shift back and forth. The invoices for any of the project can go underneath either one versus before. If it's schedule 4 and one grant is only for schedule 3 and there's an underrun, you can't capture that funding. So
but it shouldn't save money on the project.
Right.
Because, I mean, the grants are issued basically based on funding availability, right? And so they're issued in a size that is relatively unrelated to the scope of the work that it's covering. And so then you're trying to marry these up, and it's like, oh, we overran on this, or we underran on this, like, can we lose that funding? And then the FAA has to make decisions on that. And a tremendous amount of time by the ADO and our team is spent on that stuff, which just isn't adding value. So I'm really excited because it allows them to focus on what's most important. I mean, none of this is controversial. And so, you know, by pooling it together, that's the way I think of the community grant program. It says, hey, like, kind of like the Frito pool, like, part of it's inside, part of it's outside, like, you know, the sun might shine on inside a little bit. Oh, well, like, it's all one, you know. Sorry for my dumb analogy, but that's great. Is how I think of it.
And I do think it's helpful on this one as well. So the United Companies contract for the $67 million was approved in April, but there are notice to proceed along the way where we will issue those. So if the funding doesn't come in as planned, we don't have to award those. We will actually pay that demobilization fee. Okay. But all of the contracts really for United and Hunt Garber, which will get us to that open stage with a little bit of a temporary pavement layout, that's all been approved. So this is really just that next phase of funding that goes with it. So we'll have multiple other grants that are still connected to the same project, the same contracts we've already approved, and then we'll submit those notices to proceed to you once we kind of know the status of that grant funding.
Question, Commissioner? And that demobilization fee is the off-ramp you mentioned in the packet.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anything else, Colin, on this?
Nothing for me.
Okay. Because they're listed separate, I think we should take action separately. So I'll take a motion to approve FAA grant agreement AI 293.
Move to approve FAA grant agreement AI 293.
Commissioner Kennedy, second.
Second.
Commissioner Kennedy, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Is there anything else on AI 289?
I don't think so, unless you had questions. I did attach the specific amendment. Really, it doesn't change any of the dollars. It doesn't change the timeline or anything related to 89. Aside from, there are a couple of provisions. Each year when the FAA issues their grants, they look at sort of current executive orders and laws and things like that. So they did tweak a little bit of language. I know the DEI provision, and there was something else which Dan will probably remind me of. But there was a couple of provisions in executive orders that were rescinded as we've had different lawsuits. So that's taking those clauses out of 89. And then it did adjust some of the environmental to match 93. So it's not something new. It's just because they're companions. It's basically trying to align their language a little bit.
According to the new statute. So that's
exactly.
A long contract in our packet that talks about texting while driving, all those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. So yeah, there's changes in some of those individual provisions. Yeah. It's aligning it because those two grants are now tied together.
Any further questions on this one? Okay. Could I get a motion to approve AIP 89?
Motion to approve FAA grant amendment AIP 89.
Thank you, Commissioner Gaydon.
Second.
Thank you, Commissioner Scheer. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you for that. That's exciting because that's a companion grant. We want to have that
in your
pocket. Yeah.
I wish we had this 10 years ago when we started.
Yeah.
8 years ago.
But awesome. I'm pretty happy with where we are compared to where I appear to be.
Well, that's true.
Yeah. Project was a lot smaller when it started. So.
Well, yes, it would have been easier.
$10 million, I think, is the estimated cost when it started.
$100 million.
Something very small.
$100 million, precisely.
All right. Action item E, we have FAA AIP grant agreements. This is a board approved application. Okay. So this is our end of year grant acceptance form. All right. Okay.
It is. Yeah. It's really just asking for approval from the board to accept any end of year money up to the remainder left on this phase of the runway program, which gets all the way to an open state. As I showed a second ago on earlier slide, we're expecting that money to come in 27 and 28, but of course, sooner it's usually better, but it's extra better now because if it happens in 26, it would be 95% funded instead of 90-10, which is what we're counting on. So I think it's a little less likely than in the past. I've been pretty optimistic at times. there's a lot going on, there's a lot of things in motion in the region, so from conversations with the FAA, I think it's a little less likely that we get a big end of year award, but we want to be able to take whatever they have. So that's the ask. It's just to recruit that and make it easy.
May I get a motion to approve the extra better action item?
Motion approved.
Thank you, Commissioner Kleinman. Second?
Second.
Thank you, Commissioner Kennedy. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries. Does our legal team, Dan Reimer, Reimer, Cream, agree with that motion? And just for clarity, that was to accept FAA AFD grant agreements consistent with the board approved applications and anticipated projects. Okay, action item F, we have grant agreement AIP 94.
And I will take this one as well, which I put a lot of words on this slide, and I'm sorry, but so this project is another one that we've been talking about for a while. So through the IIJA funds, there were some competitive grants that we applied for when it comes to the tower. So Ben worked with the FBI team to really identify, you know, what needs to be done, what are our structural improvements, and then prioritize those, and we put them in packages to submit for these grant awards. We were notified earlier this year that our application was selected, but similar to some more other FAA projects, we had to get through design, we have to present that final construction cost to them. The Gensler team has completed that design and has bid ready documents that are going out for final pricing, but FCI has really been working with them to come up with some cost estimates. So we will be working with the FAA over the next few weeks through that contract review and pricing, just to make sure that we're feeling comfortable that they can award the grant. So since we already know the grant award amount in this one, since it was a competitive fund, it requires no matches. We're really asking for authorization to accept the grant award when it comes in, but we will still be coming back with that final contract, either in September or probably more likely October. So this is not an authorization of the work, it's just authorization to accept that grant. With many of the FAA grants, they have very strict timelines of when everything has to be signed and done by, so if we're not able to sign in time, then we lose out on those funds. So that's part of the reason we're doing all of this in August. I think their last date is like September 18th or something, which didn't align very well with our September board meeting to get everything signed in time. So this is really asking for the authorization to accept funding, and then we'll come back with that construction contract once we have final. Any questions on this at all? Okay, I'll take a motion to approve AIP 94.
Motion to approve.
Commissioner Kleinman, second. Commissioner Scheer, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Motion carries.
And one more comment on that project. So with that one, you know, that $5 million is 100% funding. We never want to leave grant funding on the table, especially when we have so many needs, but especially when it's 100% funding. So, you know, part of the work that's happening is making sure that we're planning a project that is appropriately sized where we're confident that we'll be able to spend that full $5 million. There's no match required, but, you know, we do anticipate that the contract that's under the board for will be more than $5 million. Estimated contract value, one, so we fully deplete those funds, and two, so that we get all the work that makes sense to get done, you know, with this gigantic scope all at the same time. So just wanted to point that out to the commissioners, just to kind of set expectations for the next action item. That's very helpful.
And they now have air conditioning up there, right? New HVAC, is that completed?
Yes, they've had air conditioning, yeah. And now they have air conditioning that has been working all the time.
And 104 degree heat.
Yes. Ben has been working his butt off to make sure that everyone in that building is comfortable. But the cab has remained very chilly all summer. Some of the other floors, the temperature has varied because we need to do this project.
Yeah, we ended up losing the chiller again for a period of time this year. And thank goodness we already put the two rooftop units on top of the cabs, so the controllers stay comfortable all the time. We were able to supplement the lower floors before we started that. Keep them somewhat comfortable. The controllers, we didn't have any closures due to excessive.
Yeah. Ben's had zero complaints about it being too hot. Sometimes complaints that it's too cold because as they change shifts, not all of them have the same internal thermostats.
The words of my husband, just bring a blanket.
Yeah.
Wonderful, thank you for that. And then we have, looks like our last action item is our exterior signage and wayfinding. We have the team from Gensler here. Do you guys want to make introductions for guests?
Sure. So this is Chris Fado. He is the mastermind behind the interior signage, which I think everyone agrees looks fantastic, and he does such a good job. He is part of the Gensler team, and as you know, we engaged Gensler again to work on exterior signage. That endeavor is different. It's a different kind of art than the inside, and it's a much bigger project. And so Chris has been working his butt off. We have ambitious goals to have this project done before the end of the year. Even more ambitiously, you know, wanted to have it done before Thanksgiving. Ultimately, that doesn't look like a timeline that we'll be able to meet based on the products we want to use. But then conveniently, we'll be able to do it when it's slower. So anyway, that is a long introduction for someone who's sitting next to me.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you, everybody. Going to talk to you guys about the land side exterior signage. This slide here shows the existing signage. Right now, our best guesstimate from what we got, some paperwork from Ben Sampine with us, these signs are coming up on 20 years old. They've had several different maintenance projects happen to them, updates, repaints, and so forth. They served completely well the airport to its current state, but they are in the desperate need of some refresh, just generally maintenance capabilities and overall messaging. Some of the messages are just wrong on there. So rather than just kind of adding into and kind of patchworking it again, we've worked with the Grand Junction team to be able to provide a new sign system. We got a nice slide here. We've got here's the breakdown between pedestrian and parking directionals and then roadway directionals. And then we also have an additional some new monument signs as well. But the main focus of our project here is for the landside exterior sign, the wayfinding system. And I'm not going to go through every single sign, but it basically accommodates all the arriving and departing passengers to keep that experience from when you guys have all probably know when you drove in here, the signs, you start experiencing the airport as soon as you start driving into the airport. And if you can't find your way, then the sign system is not doing its job. And our idea here is to make sure that the information stays current, the updatability is manageable for the team. And then it also serves the purpose for like the expanding parking areas so that it is adaptable for the new parking areas currently and the ones that are going to be coming online. A lot of these signs are relatively the same size and then being placed in the same position with some notable updates due to again, the updatability for future expansion of the parking areas, and then also for just general visibility and improvements on there. The what we got here is a what we call a sign location plan, and it highlights every single sign type at every single location, with some of these noting the existing foundations versus some of them being new foundations. And right here, we've got roadway signs. We're at a quantity of 50, and parking signs. Anything not within the roadways, we're providing parking signs. And a lot of these do utilize the existing light poles. It's more of just a blade sign swap out. Some of the exit signs are utilizing these existing poles to try to just limit the amount of additional holes we have to put in the ground for new signs. To just point, this is a different beast than doing the interior. While interior, you're kind of working around guests and limited hours, this you have to work around just general scheduling, materiality, finishes, construction timelines, foundations, and overall just traffic patterns with it. So right here, we feel comfortable with the new signage, which again is a really close for a like-for-like in positioning, and with a couple updates on some new signage. Yeah, and next page. This just kind of highlights the homework Gensler has done extensively on making sure that we provided every detail. The previous signs were had an overall just general layout of the signs and kind of was just here they are, and it kind of left Ben and team and the maintenance and facilities team here kind of guessing as to how they could be able to update it. So part of our package here was to make sure that all these signs are thoroughly detailed out for the fabricator to build in this particular scope. But in the event that a new sign needs to be added, they have, or messaging needs to be updated, there's a full detailed specification list provided. And then the last page here, well, these will ultimately run on a slightly different scheduling timeline due to materiality availability. We are providing designs for the four monument signs, the entry, the Walker Wall, as we're calling it currently, the secondary monument roundabout sign, and then there are two memorial aviators and memorial park signs.
So that sign in the top right looks familiar. It looks like the one with the big roundabout. That is to put, you know, a much smaller version at this last roundabout when you're exiting. It says welcome to the Green Valley.
Yeah, currently right now it's like a slate of stone, vertical stone. John's point, like, it's meant to be a follow the similar design language as to the main roundabout sign that when you arrive from the site, but not be a direct copy of it. So they both have a very abstract version of Monroeville.
An Aviator Memorial Park has a small amount of signage that doesn't seem maintained. The letters are actually attached to the precast wall there, and his team asked about enhancing things. And you know, it did its job, but we would really like to bring that in more into the airport brand, and really have it look beautiful. While it's not highly visible when you're on Walkerville Drive, it's highly visible when you're going to and from West Star. And you know, we really want to highlight that, and something that, you know, I'm not sure commissioners know, but when this park was set up, people could purchase plaques to actually put on the wall in remembrance and stuff and recognition. So we want to do a better job just, you know, having this cohesive sign there that really, I think, does it best.
Gives a plan for expanding upon those plaques and how that system can grow in the future. And not grow a horrible word, say that probably just, yeah. If needed,
yeah,
to go forward.
This material that we're using is not quickly available. Sign company has some and can get more. That's why we prioritize things that we have. Those decorative signs we just looked at, those are like to have, is how we think about it. Whereas the directional wayfinding signage, that is really needed, and so that's the priority. And so we anticipate that the installation will be phased given the scale, and so it's likely those decorative signs will go in last. But wanted to still keep it all together. It's better from a pricing perspective and just from a project perspective.
I remember touching the 2-year work.
Yeah, I think the final, like, completion of everything based on the initial timelines we got was like April, but that's where we talked about we really want to prioritize and work through like the directional vehicular coming in, because as you saw in that first slide, they're really faded.
Yeah.
So it'll be definitely a multi-phase project, but I don't think the final completion would be until the end of April. So budget-wise, it will definitely span 2 years. And I think what we have right now is really a good final estimate, but I think we've been working with both Gensler and FCI on kind of maybe some final details of there's a pedestrian sign in that kind of ad alternate section. The monument signs were sort of added as all ad alternates. I will say the pricing on the monument was much better than Angela and I had thought from when we did the initial roundabout sign. We were pretty excited about it. So I think really the ask and the action item today is authorizing Angela to finalize the contract and kind of select some of those final pieces with a not to exceed contract amount of the 2.1. I did include a little bit of owner contingency. I don't know, I anticipate that it will be below that, but I think that was sort of, we're trying to just finalize the schedule, but does that all make sense right now, or are there a few we're going to wait, maybe order with the next parking lot expansion or something like that?
Question? Yeah, we aren't, you know, we aren't ready to sign the contract yet. We'd like to sign the contract before the next board meeting, and that's why we felt confident coming to you and saying, hey, it's not going to be more than this. I want to recognize FCI and Gensler and thank them for working together with the signage contractor. But FCI bid out the work, right, and, you know, selected the contractor. Now working collaboratively to say, hey, these are our goals. Like, are there ways we can achieve our goals, you know, timing-wise and operational impact and things? So those could impact costs, but we wanted to be able to come to you so that we can keep this moving.
Chris, gorgeous work. The anchor sign as you enter the airport is, I think, just such a anchor to the valley, and you just did such a phenomenal job.
Well, we want to get it for people that are arriving to the airport, and now when people are leaving
the airport as well. They know where to go.
Yeah.
That'd be the thing. May I get a motion to approve exterior signage and wayfinding signage?
Move to approve the exterior signage and wayfinding signage.
Thank you, Commissioner Shear.
Yes, thank you.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. The motion carries. Thank you for coming all this way to present to us in person.
Absolutely.
We know of your work. There's a lot of work out there. Okay, we're headed on to staff reports. Looks like Colin, you are up first on staff report.
Hi. We've covered a lot of project updates through the action items, but I wanted to give a quick summary on a few that we didn't cover. I also wanted to just start here and just talk quickly about 1230. Runway 1230, the green outlines what we anticipate opening in October of 2028. All the items that the board approved today will help keep us on track for that. Nothing really to dive into. Just wanted to take a second and level set on, make sure we're all aligned on the direction we're headed. Parking expansion, we've talked about it in past meetings, but we are currently under design for the blue section and cyan ponds for a parking expansion. That work is underway. We've been going through city approvals. Everything's going well so far. Had to sit down with the airport last week to make sure that staff had an opportunity to review everything. We're incorporating their comments. We are anticipating construction in February through May of 2027. Solar parking, that is almost complete with the main portion of the work. Canopy itself is expected to open August 28th. We're still waiting on the solar to get completed. That's primarily, we're waiting on a connection with Xcel Energy. Where that power is going to connect is the same main terminal feed connection. And so that requires a brief closure. So the FBI team, Ben and his team have been working through what that closure looks like to make sure that there's limited passenger and airline impact. Mm-hmm. So that's tentatively scheduled for November of this year. We're trying to get it done this fall and also avoid all the holidays. So mm-hmm. we've got the main portion done, but we just need to find the right time to make sure that we can do that aimlessly.
A question on this, will we be able to open that for parking before the connection is made? Okay, great.
We will. Yes, sir.
Colin, one other quick question on the solar covered parking. If we have an opportunity to expand this, I would assume it's pretty modular as far as other grant funds that come available, other opportunities to cover more of our parking lot with this type of structure. And I know the structure's very expensive, but if the opportunity comes, I just want to know that I would assume we can connect it in and expand the project with the new infrastructure.
That's a good, I agree. We could absolutely do that if more money became available or we just wanted to do that. The spot that we picked, we actually had shifted one over originally as our starting point and decided it didn't make as much sense for the first location. So we shifted, picked it up, and moved it. I mean, it is really modular. I think that's a good description of it. We could repeat it pretty easily, I think.
Great.
Well, we don't know it because, and I know Colin feels this way too, electricity is a little bit magic to us. And so, you know, there would likely need to be, I mean, we're working with Xcel on that solar connection. My guess is if we wanted to add this much again, there could be some more substantial changes that need to be made, really just on that, in us working with Xcel. But the layout and the design, actually, Gensler, you know, set it up to mirror that sawtooth design that is throughout our terminal. And so they set it up with that kind of, I like your modular term, that modular thought process in mind so that it would look great and match the terminal as we expand.
I've had some good conversations with Alaska Solar and local folks about opportunities and how and when those come through. Because it usually takes some subsidy to make the solar purchase work. But when it comes, I realize that solar panels being subsidized is not the same as a very expensive structure that just comes through. So kind of have to figure out where to make both work. But I have a feeling we're going to have a lot of folks that really appreciate that covered parking through our hot summer. I think those are going to be coveted.
Well, we go out there, we go under the covered structure now when we're talking about stuff outside. If we're talking about signage, we went under there.
Colin, go ahead.
That's really all I had prepared, just these three items.
Can I just ask a quick question before all the parking topic? Our new vendor is off and running.
Yeah, big thanks to Sarah and Ben, because, you know, as you guys know, and we'll remember, we extended by 1 month the old parking contract, and so, you know, needed to start on August 1st. August 1st was Colorado Day, and it's Saturday, and so that was, you know, a little bit tricky to get everyone on board with coming out on a Saturday to have the cutover, and, you know, their staff, but they did a phenomenal job. Or as a reminder, the next step on that parking project, you know, the parking management side of things, is to procure new equipment out there. We want to do that with our partners. We will own the equipment. We want to make sure that it works regardless and is agnostic to who is managing. That said, we want our new partner to have a say in what is going to work best for them at the moment. Sarah and Ben are continuing to work on that. They're very motivated to be done.
It'll be a while. Great. Thank you so much. Okay. I think you're up next, Angela.
Great.
Thank you, Colin.
So first, I wanted to just acknowledge that it has been very busy with commercial diversions. There have been lots of thunderstorms in Denver, which means lots of extra planes here, full of people, some of which, you know, different stuff happens, crews time out, but people come into the terminal, and it's been a lot. I want to recognize Dylan for his great job on that. And Ben was here this weekend dealing with that as well, so big thanks to them. I mean, the way we see it is there's a bunch of people here who didn't plan to be here, and they might not know about Grand Junction when they get here, but when they leave, we want them to know about it. Good job. Really excited about our announcement. Our Brachiosaurus announcement. I'm going to try to not have my volume go up when I talk about this because I get really excited. But we are stoked to welcome this Brachiosaurus into the terminal. I'm just going to talk about it for a few moments. I've actually asked the person leading the efforts, the fundraising efforts, to come and present to the board next month. On kind of how that all that will work and how you can help, but overall, kind of big picture, we are working with the community group and with the Museums of Western Colorado. The plan is that the Museums of Western Colorado will own the Brachiosaurus, and then it will be on loan, long-term loan to the airport, much like our static aircraft displays. Like, knock on wood, we're not worried those are going anywhere, but, you know, the ownership is not with the airport itself. That's important from a fundraising perspective of things. But we're really excited. This is to commemorate 150th birthday of the state of Colorado. So we're going back 150 million years. we expect that this will be installed in 2028. I really love that, like, we're going high tech in the airfield that year, opening a new runway, or going prehistoric in the terminal. I think it's really cool. And we really want to be able to work collaboratively with the school district and get more kids out here. And, you know, we talk about the runway opening as a big milestone that's going to enable tours and things like that. Tours at a commercial airport are really hard. Okay, we'll work through it. We want kids to be able to come out here. So we really love the idea of having this guy at our terminal. We shared this with our tenants before the announcement because we have a goal of people at the airport who work at the airport not learning about big stuff at the airport in the newspaper. And, you know, the rental car companies, which I think I need to disclose, it was full of adult boys, you know, that's who's without a meeting, but their response, I cannot repeat in a public meeting, but they're very excited. Their little boy really came out, and I was relieved because I'm like, oh, good, they're going to be looking at it. So, similarly, and, you know, in anticipation, we have this Brachiosaurus skull on display, and that's on loan from the museum. Out in the terminal is in the same area where the Brachiosaurus will go. And I've checked with rental car companies to make sure they've been okay having that skull stare at them, and they love it. So it's been
very friendly
for passengers. Yeah, non-threatening. So we're really excited. I just wanted to make sure that I mentioned it. So there's a lot more information to come, but there's, you know, $850,000 of fundraising to happen. The airport's committed to a $100,000 contribution, and, you know, working collaboratively with that group, we're really excited to have this, you know, art on display. It's hard to do dinosaurs in a sophisticated way, but this is really, it's really. Okay, so moving on to less exciting things, because everything's less exciting than that. ASE, the Aspen closure. So, you know, there have been a lot of news articles lately about the Aspen closure. You know, the airlines are starting to ramp up their planning for that Aspen closure. You know, I want to make sure that the board understands kind of how we're thinking about things and kind of how the airlines explain their thinking about it. You know, for us, the Aspen closure overlaps with our busiest time of the year. So April 4th to November 19th. That truly is just our busiest time period. That's not true for the Eagle Airport, which is the other closest alternative. You know, that is typically their less busy time of year. And so, you know, what you see is the airline starting to keep in the scheduled service that they have, some of the service they have during ski season, and play the things. So I want to make sure I pointed that out, because I think that that helps explain why, you know, we don't see those same things pop up on our side. The airlines already have a lot of service here during the closure period, and so they can easily just make the aircraft larger. They can add another frequency as demand warrants. It's in a dynamic state already, and what that looks like in Eagle is, you know, they're in a dynamic state that is keeping, you know, basically continuing to offer the service that they offer other times. And everyone anticipates also that there will be some ambassadors who meet with them at the airport instead as well. In those headlines include that CDOT is planning substantial road closures through the Glenwood Canyon during the 2027 summer season. So they will, the traffic will be only on one side of the highway through the canyon, and so it'll be nose to nose single lane. So, you know, the airlines have expressed that they're not excited about that when it comes to traffic coming from the east to the west. So we'll continue to work with them, but I just wanted to make sure I brought it up because I know there have been a lot of headlines on it lately.
Did you say just the eastbound side it's going to be?
They're working on both, so okay. They'll do one and then the other. And so it'll be truly nose to nose. I don't know what that means from a speed limit perspective, but it sounds slow.
But up until you get into Glenwood where 82 hits the Aspen. Exit will be that way east.
Yeah.
So it sounds like that would be the bulk of the construction.
Are we talking about adding, is there any talk about adding flights during that time to accommodate business travel and whatever?
Yeah, so the airline would expect that they'll have extra capacity in the market. You know, they're they haven't announced any new routes, and you know, there's still potential for that. But overall, you know, the service they have here, you know, they may add extra frequency. I would be surprised if there wasn't a little uptick in frequency. They already have a lot of frequency to the hubs. But, you know, I expect that Dallas, for example, which sometimes can drop to only three times daily, so four or even two times, I expect that's going to be at 3 to 4 or maybe even more. The airlines are in a position where they can make decisions as it gets closer based on bookings and just swap out aircraft types if it's a specific thing. Structure, you know, I mean, you're connecting into a bank at the hub, so it depends on where people are going to, but they can operate in a dynamic way because they have so much service already. I just want to make sure I touched on that. Feel free to reach out if you have any questions. I'll make sure I share any updates that I have. But in the airline network planning world, it's still really far away. You know, we're not 6 months. We're still further than 6 months out. So. What is closer is the air show. So as a reminder, that's October 3rd and 4th. There are typically some events in the days preceding that. And so we'll make sure as those events are finalized, we communicate out and get invites out to you all. The air show is managed, as you know, by a nonprofit. The Grand Junction Air Show is a nonprofit. And, you know, that's run by a board led by Clay Huffley. And so at our next meeting, I'm hoping Clay can come present on it, and then they've engaged the Grand Junction Sports Commission, and they've been awesome. They're handling a lot of the operational side of things. And that way, you know, that'll be our last working workshop. So you can ask them questions, get all your info. I did want to let you know that the Colorado Aeronautical Board will hold their meeting here October 2nd. So those members can pay for their show if they choose to. So that'll be Friday morning. Again, I'll send that information out. Something we're trying to do in our invites is make it clear to you what is optional, what we really need you at. Please don't read that as anything other than information for you to make decisions from. We would love to have you at every event we share with you. I just know that you're busy and I want you to be able to make decisions on when we need you and when it's a fun thing. So, any questions about the air show? And then last, I mentioned this a few months ago, but I wanted to just remind the board, we are working on updating our civic and institutional master plans, the State Grand Junction. That is the official planning document that they use, because obviously some of the development rules, requirements, just standards at the airport are different than what the city applies to, you know, other entities. There aren't other similar entities, not that we have our own. And so we're working through that. There's a public engagement process. And so if you get any questions about that, feel free to reach out to us. This is fairly routine. You know, we update this every 5 years or so, but that is actively happening. And, you know, we're hoping that will be wrapped up first half of next year. And it's going well, too, for those on city council. You know, Thomas has been great.
Nothing else? Wonderful question. Okay, thank you, Angela. And then Sarah, the financial report.
Yeah. I thought first I would actually start with maybe an update on the SIB loan funds. I think this kind of came up in exec because we have so many projects, just kind of to refresh where we're at. So really this table is from 2023 when we got our first SIB loan and the projects associated. And kind of I've listed on the left-hand side, the initial one really was to pay for that paving of that, what we refer to as the overflow lot, and we also used to have employees in that lot. So it paid to pave that and then establish the new unpaved milling block for the employees, that segregation. That was that first project. In 2025, we did the parking expansion, and then a portion of that 2025 loan also paid for part of the solar. And then the 2026 loan is really covering the remainder part of that solar project that wasn't covered with 2025. And then we had also estimated and planned for some new parking equipment, just a placeholder of the $1 million. We don't have, you know, those final numbers back yet. We did have some put aside for some of the bus stop relocation, just curbside and pedestrian improvements when it came to lighting and some of those things. As you know, we've decided to push pause. We've actually changed to the demand on-demand only for the bus, so it's reducing a little bit of the traffic that comes through. But really, I think our intent is to take some of these funds and put some of that towards signage, because I think that still aligns with the application. It is an improvement for the pedestrians, those finding and the wayfinding. And then the remainder was to go towards the design and the bid agreement with Garber for that next design phase, but none of the construction piece. So about $15.8 million in projects, about $15.7 million in funding. We have fully drawn down all of the funds from 2025, and we're now able to, it was funded, I want to say like August 4th or 1st, it was really close to the beginning of the month. So we'll be able to do a drawdown with our August invoices for solar parking and take that out of escrow. The way that it works is the state pre-funds those amounts to home loan, and then Jennifer gets to send a request to the state and to home loan that has specific requirements. They then release it from escrow, and then it can go into our general account. So we can transfer it to Apollo Trust to earn interest or whatever we need to do with that. But we have the funds, they're just in an escrow and a reserve account until we demonstrate that we have sent out that money. So I think it's going really well at this point, but just wanted to give kind of that overview and refresher on where those funds went, and I do think we'll have some available for the signage as well.
Questions on that?
Okay. Yeah. Some of the more kind of standard slides here, we have our July employment numbers. We have the 43rd consecutive month of that year over year, you know, month to month growth. In July, we were up about 5% over last year, and year to date, we're just holding at that 14% above budget through July. So really excited with where we're sitting right now in employment. Backing up a month to June, which matches what was in your packet, We were ahead of budget in our revenues. Again, the non-aeronautical revenue is really driving that. Aeronautical revenue, primarily from airlines, is closer to budget. We do have some increases related to the diversion landings and then the BLM and firefighting activities. Those landings are really up. That's also closing the gap on our fuel tax and our fuel flowage fees that have had a little bit of a gap in the beginning of the year. I think those will get mostly closed, although I do have some preliminary and kind of conservative projections for you. But revenue is going really strong right now. Operating expenses, we are over budget. We've been talking about this with some of these projects. Year to date, we're at about 350. That will level out a little bit, I think, in some other areas where we'll have some savings. But we are over budget there. Because of how well we're doing in revenue, though, really that net impact, that net operating income is within 2% and 20,000. And I do anticipate a positive variance in that. I did prepare, again, just a really kind of rough and conservative forecast, but I wanted to talk, you know, as we're starting to get into budget, we'll do this in a little bit more detail. But those numbers look a little doom and gloom, so I did want to just kind of take that opportunity to project ahead. I do think it's likely we may come in about $140,000 over in operating expenses, which is a little bit under 2%. Really, it's that repairs and maintenance and then our supplies and materials costs that we have this year. We had a couple things that were actually budgeted and planned in 2025 that leaked into 2026. So that's a little bit of that where we got, you know, ahead of what we were planning early in the year. But I do think revenues, we will likely be close to that 400,000, almost 4% over. So from a net operating income, looking to be ahead by about 10%, but we will likely be over in operating. When it comes to what we filed with the state, we have to do appropriations. Just being over in our operating expenses will not trigger any kind of budget amendment, if any of you had that in your mind, that we would need to do that. Our projects, I think, will probably be under by maybe about $4 million, just the timing of when, you know, that comes in from the grant funding and the projects we've issued. So we don't have any, I don't anticipate there will be any need to amend the budget, but I wanted to just kind of put this in front of you guys. As an initial look, again, we'll refine this a little bit more. I did take some conservative estimates here, using some run rates and things like that. So could be stronger, but just wanted to get it in front of you in case you guys had that question yet, and open to any questions you have right now too.
There's really just a handful of things that, you know, contribute to that 140,000. Yeah. I mean, the escalator, you know, changing maintenance providers and really being thorough in, you know, the work we did to improve reliability, was really expensive. Is one of them. Ben talked about the sharing on the tower. We just had some really high dollar repair items that were not, we didn't budget for those. We didn't expect that. No.
And non-recurring, kind of one-time event. So we are working with, you know, staff to say, we don't want to hold up installing anything that is critical, that is needed, especially with passenger traffic being up. We don't want it to be operationally impactful, because we could certainly do those projects next year. So if it's going to make immediate, you know, impact any of our passengers, we're still proceeding with projects too. So that also reflects that, in that we're not just doing a full stop. But I think this feels like the balanced approach for our airline rates and charges too. That's really what some of those budgeted items, we're trying to balance their rates by what projects we're doing in each year as well. So we are delaying some that are not critical, not impacting, you know, passengers, but that's kind of my initial best guess, if you will.
And as a reminder, because of how we charge the airlines, you know, when activities levels are higher than budgeted, if you hold all those comps and everything else is on budget, we actually refund money back to the airlines because, you know, we charge them based on what we spend. And so because this is a year where we're up also, you know, there's some value in us being slightly over budget because it will be slightly because it's work that needs. Do you guys have any concerns about this? Let us know if you think of any, you know, don't be shy about reaching out. You know, when we look from a net operating income perspective, which is, I think is how we're a public entity, but we're a user fee funded, no taxpayer dollars, right? That's how we think about things. We aren't concerned.
Not really.
Good.
the rest of my update, unless anybody had any questions from the packet or anything else that went out ahead of time. And I can't believe we are ahead of my schedule too with that size of agenda.
I know.
You guys did good.
So then I do have one question.
Yeah, absolutely.
How many days has our escalator been operating?
Want to say they were 130.
They're both way over 100 in second phase.
Let's go.
Do we have a sign that?
Just a rolling ticker?
Well, no, but passengers have not forgotten that it was closed for a while, based on the comments that we see online, on the social media posts about things that are not related to the escalator, so it's still too close.
Well, thank you for your work on that. Is there any other questions or anything else? Okay, I'll take a motion to adjourn.
Motion adjourned.
Second, okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you all very much for your organization and time today. Good to see you.
Thanks for calling in, Dan.
Thanks, Tom. Y'all, you have your menu request for Fatima's.
Otherwise, you give me
Victoria would really be grateful for this. I'm certain of it.
You can add any favorites.